Welcome back, everybody, to the Unfounded Podcast. My name is Christopher Turner, and I am your host. Thank you for joining me again after last week's episode, a very heavy one, as I'm sure you all found out. But one that was, I found really refreshing, a perspective, at least after I rewatched that episode, that I haven't seen very much of, where you get to kind of take pieces of each argument and really sit with them for a second and see how you feel about them. By no means, like I said in last episodes, was that one meant to kind of solve the Israel-Palestine conflict, but it was more meant to dive into it a little deeper and give it a little more time, the time it deserves, so that we can actually contemplate these ideas at the level they deserve. So we can maybe figure out a way out of them, right? Out of these negative situations. And oftentimes these situations are created by our own actions, and we fail to recognize that. One of the ways that we do this often, the way that we enable this in our lives, is through making a habit out of lying. And lying is something that we all at a very young age are taught to try to train out of ourselves, but it's done in a way that kind of makes us feel as if we are bad inherently for having the capacity to lie, right? And this is the topic of today's podcast that I want to get into. It's going to be a little different than the last couple, because we're going to dive very deeply into this idea, lying, how it's manifesting itself in the world right now, and what we can each individually do to avoid losing ourselves in that confusion, right? I found throughout my life that I have lied so many times at different points that it became not only easy, but like second nature to do it. I think this is an experience that most of us come to at some point in our lives, where we think of ourselves as good people, but then slowly over time we find ourselves doing the things that we associate with bad people, right? Lying is one of the critical, is the crux of this, I think. One of the kind of points of leverage through which we can try to grasp on to who we are truly. But in order to do that, we have to let go of the illusions that we've created for ourselves, these lies. What I've noticed over the last week, and the reason I want to go into this topic, is we're starting, sorry, the music I'm listening to just kind of took me off guard there. It sounded like wind. There's winds blowing. The winds of change are blowing. And one of the ways that you can see this happening in the world is through this very specific authenticity or lack thereof, right? Specific figures, important figures, figures that have been idols up until this point in many ways, are being shown to be dishonest in different ways, but it's a subtle thing and you have to look for it. And the only way to really identify it is to cultivate honesty within yourself. Otherwise, you'll find yourself being attracted to these people in ways that are hard to explain. One of the reasons lying is so important to focus on and to dive deeply into is because as we lie, we get further away from who we are. We'll get deeper into this, into the spiritual side of the podcast, but as you lie, you actually stop, you lose the ability to tell where truth is. The more you do it, the less accurate your sight becomes. And so you start to mistrust your own perception. And this is the critical point to think about, to focus on as we move forward in this world, is who do we want to be? You know, do we want to be ourselves, or do we want to be some version of ourselves that we've created unintentionally by constructing falsities throughout our lives? And I believe the answer that everybody comes to, if they truly sit with that and recognize that that's what is happening, is that they want to be honest. They want to figure out who they are. That's what I've been going through, at least for the last 4 or 5 years, is not only the deep desire to become a more honest person than what I was up until that point, but in that process to figure out who I truly am. Because I realized about 4 or 5 years ago that I was a person that I didn't trust. Matter of fact, I was a person that I didn't like very much. I didn't like myself so much, in fact, that I would degrade myself in front of other people. I would allow other people to degrade me. I would attract friends and lovers that were hurtful to me. But because they were in ways that aligned with the lies I had already told myself, I accepted that treatment as if it was justified, as if I deserved it. And this feels like a story that many have felt and could express if they had the opportunity to, which is why I'm bringing it up. So without further ado, we're going to start off the podcast like we've been doing these last two or three, with kind of a world update. And the first video I'm going to cut to here it's fascinating for me. It's a political figure, a news figure, right? Somebody that we've all followed, we're all pretty familiar with, that's been very outspoken over the last 4 years, specifically once COVID became a big deal. The person I'm talking about is Chris Cuomo. For those of you who aren't familiar with who he was a CNN news anchor for quite a while, I believe at least 10, maybe more years. And somebody that I watched fairly religiously when I was kind of deeply enthralled in the liberal side of politics, as I was studying politics, working in it, and trying to make my own way there. Chris was somebody that I followed kind of religiously and listened to quite often for my political insight. And so I became deeply kind of invested in what he was saying and the authenticity through which he was saying it, because it was tied at that point in time to my ideas, my ideals. So that when I saw this most recent video that you're about to see, it really took me back. And I've been thinking about it this whole week, and it's partially what's made me want to talk about and think about deep dive into lying in this podcast. So without further ado, this is a clip. The first clip we're going to watch is a clip from Chris Cuomo around 2020, actually. And this was at the beginning of COVID. Now, to set up kind of the whole scenario here, Chris was very outspoken. For those of you who don't know or didn't watch CNN during the pandemic, Chris was one of like the front runners, one of the people that was really outspoken and calling people out, especially if you were anybody that brought an opinion other than what was being kind of defined as the truth by the government. I'm having a hard time thinking of the actual way to describe it. But he was essentially became, from what I could tell, a propagandist. And it's partially why I stopped watching Chris, was because I could tell that when he started talking about COVID, they didn't match up with the things that I was experiencing or believing. So it forced me to decide whether I was going to continue to accept things, these ideas, as I had before, even though I recognized that I didn't believe him anymore. And so this video kind of gives you an example of what I was experiencing, what most people were seeing from Chris around 2020 when the pandemic first started. Without further ado.
Everybody should know that about you, Byron Donald. You are not telling people to get vaccinated. You are not pushing it. You are not saying it's the right choice. You're saying you're not doing it and your family's not doing it, and you're leaving out of the equation that you can make other people sick, as if that doesn't matter. Okay?
Chris, did you not just hear my answer 30 seconds ago where I said if you want to be protected from these variants and the original strain, please go get vaccinated? I promote you to do that. I just told you live on your own show that if you want to get vaccinated in America, go do it. But if there are Americans like myself who choose not to, please don't berate me for doing that. That is a personal choice I have made. It's my own health care. I am allowed to do that. I'm entitled to do it.
Byron, you're absolutely right to do it. You have a right to do it. Two different statements. Okay? Do you have the right? Of course, nobody's debating that except you guys as a false choice. What I'm saying is it right to do it? Have you spoken to a doctor? You're supposed to be a leader. Have you talked to the CDC and the people who are in Florida at the Department of Health about whether or not they think you made a good choice? Because if your answer is just then, well, I don't care what they say. This is me. I'm an American. That is being dumb as a proxy for being bold. And I don't think it's a good message, because remember, it's not just you protecting yourself.
Let me say this.
It's you protecting me and other people from you. That's why you get vaccinated, not just for yourself. Important distinction. Go ahead.
actually, the way vaccines work are to protect yourself. A vaccine basically gives you a special cocoon where you actually limit the worst harmful effects of the virus itself, or may not get it altogether, depending on your own personal physiology. So that's the way vaccines work. Now, to me personally, I did talk to a couple of doctors that I know about it. I told them I already had it, and I'm 42. What do you think? And they said, yeah, you're fine. If that's what you want to do, go ahead and do it. They didn't come and say, no, no, you have to do it because of everybody else. Because if other people want to be protected, they have access to vaccines. Go get the vaccine. I would never tell anybody not to get vaccinated. People, I do totally support it if that's what somebody chooses to do.
Byron, I'm with you.
I don't know why this is hard. It's that simple.
Yeah, so it is that simple, isn't it? Very interesting clip there. You know, it might bring back some memories for those of you who did watch CNN or who were very following the news very closely, any of the outlets, MSNBC, Fox even, while the pandemic news was starting to spread as we were getting more information. It was a very confusing time. And if you're interested in trying to kind of rekindle what it felt like during that period of time, this podcast started right about 2 months before the pandemic started. Right. So if you go back to the very first episodes, the first probably 10 to 15 are going to be right before the pandemic started. And then you'll see and hear as the pandemic starts to unravel and roll out, me contemplating some of these things, some of these, this news that's coming out of, you know, what is the vaccine? Is there one or two different versions of it? Is it safe? Has it been tested? Right. And then once it's been rolled out, should you get it? What I came to slowly as I watched the news and watched how these stories unfolded was that I didn't trust the information that I was being given. It was one of the first times that I could see very clearly, as I'm sure many of you could, that there was a certain type of animus behind what was being told to us that felt like it was trying to convince us of something, right? It didn't feel authentic, and I didn't know why, but I could feel just intuitively that I don't trust this. And I think many of you watching probably had a similar feeling at the time, but it's so subtle, right? And we only have very specific, especially during COVID, we only had specific outlets that we felt like we could trust. And so most of us looked to people like Chris for our information. And many of us went and got, you know, the vaccines or whatever you did based on that information. Now, fast forwarding over the last 2 or 3 years, what we've come to find out slowly is that most of the information that was given to us through Fauci, Chris, and other people like them who were kind of the disseminators of the information at the time, we slowly found out that most of what was told to us was not only kind of obscuring the truth, it was blatantly false. And so where we're at now is a point where I believe most people, most of you watching at the very least, have come to a conclusion that what happened during COVID was a travesty, a very specific kind, one in which the American people and people around the world, the rights of those people, the divinity of the human soul and the human spirit was crushed very intentionally, I believe, in order to control and manipulate the population to become a more docile thing, right? And clips like what we just watched is an example of that propaganda at play, right? And one of the people that was spreading that propaganda, Chris. Now, the reason I showed that clip to begin with is I just recently listened, I'm a follower of the Patrick Bet David PBD podcast. If any of you are followers of him, it's a great podcast. If you aren't, check it out, because there's a lot of very important figures, just like on Joe Rogan, that come through there. So it's really important to kind of keep yourself up to date by listening to that podcast. But also, PBD does a good job of kind of having on individuals that he doesn't agree with and doing things that most people wouldn't do, kind of challenging the status quo. One of the ways that PBD has done that recently is through bringing Chris after being separated from CNN a couple of years back, bringing Chris on to his company, Valuetainment, and the podcast, PBD Podcast. Why this is a radical thing is because Chris traditionally has been very liberal, or at the very least, he doesn't present himself that way, but he's been working for liberal establishment, right? CNN being one of the main kind of liberal news outlets, at least the way it's viewed modern day. And so PBD bringing somebody like Chris onto his podcast, because PBD's podcast is fairly conservative, is representative of a process that's necessary of us kind of opening our arms to the people that we view as the opposite end of the spectrum or the enemy, and listening to what they have to say. I love this. It's one of the reasons why I listen to PBD's podcast. But that being said, I've been very confused on how I feel about Chris. As I've listened to the first couple episodes and listened to him talk about his time at CNN and who he is as a person and what he believes, because there's moments where I find it very inspirational and I find him a person that I'd, you know, has qualities that I'd want to embody. But then there's other times where I find him doing things that really confuse me and make me not trust him. And this next video I'm going to show you is a response to a question that PBD and other people have been kind of asking as Chris has become a member of this new show. And it's based on how he acted during COVID, right? Basically, people are looking for an apology, right? People are looking for Chris to recognize that videos like what we just watched, acting like that towards people, was one of the ways in which we were trampling on the rights of other individuals and demonstrating exactly the opposite principle that PBD is demonstrating through bringing Chris onto his podcast, right? By shaming somebody on the national stage, you are manipulating them into doing what you believe is right. Now, at the time, I truly believe Chris believed this was right, which is why he was fighting so ardently against anything other than the narrative, the establishment narrative of what happened during COVID. But that being said, retrospectively, I think there's a lot of insight we've gained into what the truth actually is. And it's important to see how somebody responds once that new information has come to light. So that being said, this next video is a clip from one of the PBD's most recent podcasts. I think it's about two or three of them back, if you want to listen to it yourself, in which Chris is kind of confronted with this concept, this idea of, were you wrong during COVID? And this is his response.
Okay, not us resurfacing. We've had conversations, we've talked about COVID. Tom and I are talking about the long vaccine and what that's doing. A lot of my friends are going through it. And
long keep COVID. Hearing,
long, I'm sorry, long, not long vaccine, forgive me. Long COVID. A lot of friends are talking about it. We're 40, 50, you know, you're sitting there saying, hey, what the hell is going on in my body? What's changed from that conversation with you and Byron to where you are today?
Well, a lot has changed, and a lot needs to change that hasn't. Here's what matters to me about the clip. Apology? Of course not. Byron Donalds comes on my show now, okay? Why? Exchange of respect. Was never personal. I believe as a leader, at that time, you had a duty to be thorough in what you were putting out there as opposed to just playing politics, okay? This was never as simple as vaccine good, vaccine bad. Politics made it that. And it put us into a toxic environment, no pun intended, where even today, there's no curiosity about the vaccine. You get a VAERS system, which is very imperfect, and you don't have robust government dialogue or investigation of the vaccine. You don't have political investigation of what happened during the pandemic, what was right, what was wrong, to Vinny's point about what's still continuing, about who wants to control what. Because they only see politics, they only see advantage. My concern is that the unknowns are now more dangerous than the knowns. So what's changed since then? I don't have long vaccine. People are saying long vaccine.
Oh, okay.
People are saying I've admitted that the vaccine hurt me. I have not admitted that. I don't know that. Do I now believe that we have data to support the fact that there are thousands of people who have had adverse effects that are not getting attention, let alone treatment? Yes. And I fault government for that. I do have what they call long COVID. Now, I say they call because the government, you know, it's funny, after that clip, I got called by government people bitching at me because I said that the vaccine wasn't perfect. That's where we were then. That's where we were then. But
oops, right? I don't know if anybody noticed that at the very end there. But that's concerning. I don't know if it is to you, but to me, at the very end, when Chris very briefly, and I think he mistakenly mentioned that, that the government was in contact with him, at the very least enough to tell him that they were unhappy with the way that he was presenting some of the COVID information, which is precisely why people did not trust you, Chris, during COVID. Because exactly what everybody was suspicious of, that you, the people who were supposed to be the journalists investigating what was actually going on and questioning whether the government was telling the truth, were working in cahoots with the government to refine the narrative into something that benefited them, right? Which is what you just said at the very end of that video. I don't know if anybody else watching right now is as frustrated as I am, but part of the reason I'm doing this video is because I believe these kind of things deserve to be called out. One of the things I've noticed with people who are caught lying is they will never recognize that they have lied externally unless you force them to, unless you point that out and hold their feet to the fire. And this is not to be a judge of those people. We're not holding their fire because we're better than them. We're doing it so that we show the world and that person where we went wrong, where we all go wrong, how we're human and how we're not perfect. Because the way that Chris has presented himself up until that point is as a impartial arbiter of both sides, a journalist, a true journalist who questions things that he doesn't believe and would push against any kind of authority figure, right, that would tell him what the truth is. That's why people would watch your show, Chris. That's partially how you made your show into what it was by being the person that would bring the truth. So you having contact with government officials in any capacity and aligning your messaging with them in any capacity is a betrayal of the trust that you're supposed to be cultivating with the American people. And it is precisely why platforms like CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, and all of the rest are going away, and why people are starting to listen to figures like me and others and other small form media platforms. Because I hope you can tell that I'm not doing this for any other reason besides I don't like that. I don't like that in myself, and I really don't like it when I see it in other people, because it means that if I see something like that and don't call it out and allow it to continue, I'm part of the problem. I'm lying then. And this is what's so insidious about lying in general, is if you allow somebody to lie in front of you and you accept that, you become an accomplice to that lie. They wrap you up in it. And then further down the line, you're now their ally in something that you never wanted to be. I think partially why I'm so worked up over this is because Chris was a very important figure to me as I was learning about politics, as I was studying politics in school. I was somebody, and I mean this, you could talk to my parents or my friends at the time, and they would tell you themselves that I was addicted to the news. I'm somebody that watched it habitually, 24/7, so much so that I started to have issues with it mentally, being able to keep myself in a non-depressed state, in a happy state, because I was constantly filling my mind with what was going wrong in the world and how should we solve it. And this is something, an experience that I think most young kids, as we're being learning about politics, get consumed with, because we have that fire to make the world into a better place, you know, that naive spirit is still kind of alive and well, and it wants to be the thing that changes or moves the ball forward. And so I was in that very, very moldable state when Chris was becoming kind of the lead anchor on CNN, along with Don Lemon and these other people. And I watched them and trusted them and listened to them and used their opinions as my own for a very long time. And what it created in my life was destruction. It created animosity towards people that I loved, friends that I had, specifically family members. At the time that this was going on for me, it was around the 2016 election when Donald Trump was first going to be elected. And I was extremely radically liberal at this time. I voted for Hillary Clinton in the first election, which is something I'm not proud of saying at this point, right? But it's something that is true. And I did so because I was caught up in all of the fervor around Donald Trump and the immorality that surrounded him and how he shouldn't be deserving of a title like president because of that. That I allowed that to convince me largely because I listened to figures like Chris and I listened to figures like Don Lemon, and they presented themselves as moral figures, figures that wouldn't lie, arbiters of truth. So what the fuck was that, Chris? What did I just watch? I believe everybody that you presented yourself to as an arbiter of truth deserves an explanation for why you weren't being honest about where you were getting your information from during COVID. Why you used COVID, obviously, quite obviously, to project yourself up into a position where you were the arbiter of truth. You were the person people looked to because you and your brother both made yourself that during COVID to benefit you, didn't you? That's why nobody could hear about COVID without hearing about you, your long COVID, and your brother. Why you had those meetings with each other where you're talking about COVID and all of these other family kind of principles and things, about morality itself. My God, is that hypocritical, right? Again, I say this not to shame you, Chris, if you are watching this. I say this because I believe it is important to point out, because I believe that you are, just like everybody else, a good person. I believe that you have that capacity, and I don't believe you did any of this on purpose so that you could be manipulative. I believe this is a process that manipulates us internally. Lying manipulates you when you do it. It slowly confuses you. It turns you into the thing that you hate. And then once you realize you're that, you'll lie more so that people don't find out what you've become. And I fear that that's a process that's happened with you, Chris, and I don't want to see it go any further, because I believe you are somebody that could stand up for the principles you espouse and actually be an arbiter of them, right? I believe you could be an example, especially after going through this, especially after making a mistake lying to the American people. I believe if you recognized that mistake, apologized for it properly, truly, deeply, internally, you would become the thing that you were trying to be in COVID, the person people look towards, right? But that requires you do the authentic thing, being a real human being and recognizing, hey world, I'm not perfect, I fucked up. Because that will do a lot to show everybody else in the world how they can stand up for the mistakes they've made and how they can recuperate their lives after the fact. And how we can all identify the real problem here, the people trying to tell us what the truth was. It's not your fault that you were manipulated, Chris. It's the people that were doing the manipulating, right? We need to call them out. And the reason I'm calling you out is so that you call out those people. You said it yourself. They were the ones contacting you. So contact them, right? A lot of energy coming through. And honestly, I was very nervous to start this podcast. I stopped it initially because I didn't have it set up right. And even about 10 minutes into this, I was debating on whether I would restart it. And every time I've ever had that kind of feeling like I need to stop or something's trying to block what I'm doing, I've always pushed through it. And what I've found at the other end is something really valuable. And that's important as a kind of a side note to anybody that's watching right now. When you feel nervous, when you feel scared, when you feel like what you're about to do is something that is could be dangerous to you, right? Could risk something of you. Know that if it is something that is principled, that you are acting on something that you actually believe in, that you are protected. Not from kind of pain, but from being destroyed by it, if that makes sense, right? And this is true for you too, Chris. Just because, as I've tried to point out, there was a mistake made, it doesn't mean you're a bad person. It means you're a human being just like I am, and I'm trying to get you to recognize that so everybody else stops pretending like they're perfect, right? Stops confusing themselves with God, stops acting like narcissists, egomaniacs. Because if I'm quite honest, when I first watched this video and this podcast, Chris, I was so angry that I was screaming that at the phone at you, narcissist, egomaniac, liar. But that's not proper, because that's not what you are fundamentally. I don't believe you're a malicious person. That's what I wanted to believe. That's what the dark side of me wants to believe, wants to make you into, is a demon, somebody that took my right away, my right to the truth. But that's not the truth, right? That's the predator inside of me trying to take your eye for taking mine, right? As we talked about in last episode. And that's not what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to recognize that the world is a dangerous place. As Marcus Aurelius would say, when you wake up, you need to challenge yourself with what is present in the world. See it with clear eyes. Don't ignore it. This isn't going to be an easy day. This is going to be a hard day. Matter of fact, this is most likely going to tear me apart at the seams. I'm going to run into people that I hate. I'm going to find situations that make me disgusted. This is all a possibility. At the same time, there's every possibility that I could experience something so joyous, so miraculous, so beautiful, that it would make every single one of those negative experiences worthwhile. And so you bolster yourself against the wickedness of the world when you do that. And that is what is required of us. We don't hide ourselves from the sides of ourselves that are nasty and wicked, or the sides of other people that are nasty and wicked. We look at those clearly, first through us and then at other people. Amen. A lot of channeled energy coming through with that one. But that's not the only kind of example of this that I've seen recently. And it was funny because I listened to a lot of podcasts, if you couldn't tell. And I'll probably make a list of all of them for you guys at some point and post them in the show notes, you know, just so you can follow all of them. Because a lot of the ideas I get from other podcasts, listening just like you are to this one and wanting to speak on it myself, right? And so if you have that same, I'm getting this as kind of a specific message for somebody listening. If you have that same kind of intuitive sense right now that you want to speak on what I'm talking about or any of the topics that I talk about, that's just something inside of you calling you to create your own version of whatever this is, right? Just do your own version of it, right? But I listen to PBD quite a bit, PBD podcast. I listen to Joe Rogan religiously, and I listen to Lex Friedman all the time. I listen to Jordan Peterson all the time. But I also listen to some funnier podcasts. I like to listen to Bad Friends, which is a really good one to listen to if you just want to be entertained. I love listening to Theo Von, which is actually a really insightful podcast, as well as being a comedy podcast. But I've also recently started listening to a podcast called Tiger Belly, and it has Bobby Lee, who's also in Bad Friends, with his ex-girlfriend. And they have this podcast that they've been doing for quite a while, and they have on different celebrities and things. But they just recently, in their most recent episode, had on Nikki Glaser. And if you aren't familiar with who Nikki Glaser is, she's a comedian, a stand-up comedian. She's been fairly popular for at least the last 5 or 6 years, if not a little longer. And somebody that I've listened to at different points in time, not somebody that I'm necessarily a big fan of, but somebody that I wasn't necessarily not a fan of either, right? But somebody that's in the news right now and is actually really popular because of a new comedy special that was released on Netflix, roasting Tom Brady. And I'm sure you've at least heard of it or seen something, an article about it or a clip of it at this point, if you didn't watch the whole thing. I didn't watch the whole thing. I just saw the clips. But that being said, it seems really meaningful, the show itself, the Netflix roast, because there was a lot of jokes. The comedy that's coming through there was very pointed. And some of the more taboo subjects that have been coming up in the last year, year and a half surrounding celebrities and their dealings, right, were joked about on the national stage. And it was really interesting to watch how people reacted, you know, different celebrities to them being called out in different ways. But Nikki Glaser was arguably thought of as one of the best presenters on the stage. And many people, you know, loved her jokes and thought she did a fantastic job in this most recent special. So I was kind of interested after seeing how popular it was to listen to her a little more, learn about her a little more. And so I was listening to Tiger Belly, and I unfortunately came across a part of it that didn't make me very happy, on the same line of lying, but a little different version of it. And so I wanted to show you this so that we can continue down this topic a little bit deeper. And so you can have another example of how this is being kind of spotlighted in the world right now, if you're paying attention, right? So without further ado, this is Nikki Glaser on the Tiger Belly podcast.
Yeah. With a smile, it totally doesn't look bad.
It doesn't look bad.
As you were saying, I feel like women roasters are just on a different level.
Different level.
You, Natasha, even girls like Kim Congdon. Like, there is just
Kim.
A different
I worked with Kim
level. And I
was she
like,
on it?
Yeah, she was on my team. Like, she was, we were working together on this.
Oh, she would help you write.
She was helping direct, helping. Yeah, she was helping me write. She was, you assemble a team of your friends and you
wow.
go all hands on deck.
Do you pay them or no?
Hell yes, I pay them.
Oh, yeah,
I did not make any money on this. I'm spending all, and I pay well because I have people who care about me, who work so hard, who are taking this as seriously as I'm taking this. And man, this is so essential to me. They should be making as I try to, you know, I try to be very generous because it felt so great because last night it was such a team effort. I assembled such a crew because I'm treating my specials and I'm treating these kinds of opportunities like, okay, if I did a talk show and got a talk show, wouldn't I hire a writing team?
Yeah.
And a writer's assistant to keep track of all the notes and a producer to like just weigh in on stuff and call meetings together to talk about what are we going to do with this TV show? That is protocol. But with stand-up specials, you just kind of go, I'm taking a special, I'm just going to on my own put together this narrative that I've never really, I just get up on stage and tell jokes in different time increments. I'm not really putting together a story. I don't know how to weave a story. So now I'm like, oh, let's bring on someone to do my special that knows something about weaving a story. Okay, actually, let me
call
in my
it?
Friends who are fun
where
to
are you doing the special?
You know, riff with. I did it in Seattle.
And who a company?
It's coming out Saturday. That's why,
Netflix?
That's why I'm here to promote.
Netflix?
No, HBO.
So, you saw me kind of chuckling a little bit through that, but it's not funny. I don't know if you picked up on that at least, or if you were kind of thrown back a little bit. But if you watch that video, it's a very subtle thing going on here. But Nikki is, you know, brought on this podcast and he's talking to Bobby. Bobby's a comedian, right? And Bobby's, you know, asking about how they wrote the jokes. And you see Bobby's ex. I can't remember her name right now for some reason. I'm sorry. Apologies. But she asks in a very excited way, like, you know, it's really cool to see, somebody so funny, a female comedian up there just killing it and all these female comedians just killing it. And I think that's why the next part of that clip is so disappointing, is because what you see from her is like a real genuine admiration for what she saw on the stage and a belief that that was, from what I can tell, she believed that Nikki did that by herself. That's why she said that, right? Is that she was one of these women, these talented women that were writing these jokes and killing it. And then what you see Nikki very, very subtly start to admit is that that wasn't the case, that Nikki, and this is a common thing I think in comedy, but something that I think is a little taboo, and you can tell because of how Nikki talks about it, right? And especially if you watch how Bobby reacts. Let's watch this one more time because I want you to pay attention to everybody's facial expressions and I want you to tune into how you feel, because there's an awkwardness after Bobby's girlfriend, ex-girlfriend says that compliment. It becomes very awkward and the energy starts to stagnate and you can see everybody's faces like, should we be upset by this? Because I'm a little upset. And it's like, nobody wants to say, I'm kind of upset by what you're saying. That's also why Nikki is defending that very subtly. If you wonder like why the next 2 minutes are Nikki explaining why she has people write for her, that's a subtle indication that she's ashamed of it herself, right? Why else would you defend it without people asking you to defend it? It's an indicator that you don't think what you're doing is right, which is why I bring it up, Nikki. Let's watch it one more time. Pay attention to how people react, because this is something that'll key you into how people are feeling when you say something that isn't true.
With a smile, it totally doesn't look bad.
It doesn't look bad.
As
I
you were
feel
saying.
Like women roasters are just on a different level.
Different level.
You, Natasha, even girls like Kim Congdon. Like
Kalila is her name.
Different
I worked with Kim.
Level.
Sorry, Kalila.
And I
was she
like,
on it?
Yeah, she was on my team. Like she was, we were working together on this.
Oh, she would help you write.
She was helping direct, helping, yeah, she was helping me write. She was, you assemble a team of your friends and you
see
all hands on deck.
You pay them or no?
Hell yes, I pay them.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I'm. I did not make any money on this.
You see Bobby's confusion?
I pay well because I have people who care about me, who work so hard, who are taking this as seriously as I'm taking this. And man, this is so essential to me. They should be making as I try to, I try to be very generous.
It's weird, right?
It felt so great because last night it was such a team effort. I assembled such a crew because I'm treating my specials and I'm treating these kinds of opportunities like, okay, if I did a talk show and got a talk show, wouldn't I hire a writing team?
Yeah.
And a writer's assistant to keep track of all of the notes?
Yeah, you would.
And a producer to like just weigh in on stuff and call meetings together to talk about what are we going to do with this TV show? That is protocol. But with stand-up specials, you just kind of go, I'm taking a special, I'm just going to, on my own, put together this narrative that I've never really... I just get up on stage and tell jokes in different time increments. I'm not really putting together a story. I don't know how to weave a story. So now I'm like, oh, let's bring on someone to do my special that knows something about...
Except that's the thing, Nikki. Like, that's why people follow you, is because they believe that you make a story. They believe that you tell those jokes, you create those things yourself. You're the one presenting them. Who else is writing them, right? This is not just a problem with the comedic industry that we're starting to see, but this is actually something that's becoming really big issue in the rap industry right now, specifically with the Drake and Kendrick kind of beef that's going on. A lot of people, if you're familiar with that, it's very confusing and very, very dramatic, like high school dramatic. But if you pay attention to it, partially what's being called out is that a lot of people are accusing Drake of not writing his own stuff, having ghostwriters and using other people's kind of content to boost his own. And so this is a similar thing that you're seeing with Nikki. And I'm not trying to criticize you, Nikki, as a person. I'm trying to do the same thing I'm doing with Chris, because I believe that you are a talented individual. That's why you're there. I also believe the only reason why you're doing that, allowing other people to write for you, you said yourself, it's because you don't believe you can tell a story, but you can. If you believe you can, that's why you're there. That's why you're on the national stage, is to tell your story, not somebody else's, and pretend like it's your own. If you couldn't see it, that's why Kalilah didn't, who was complimenting you, didn't respond the entire 2.5 minutes while you're talking, because she's disappointed. At least that's what I felt. And you could see quite obviously, Bobby is searching the room for reactions like, everybody else cool with this? Because you could tell Bobby wasn't, but he's trying to be cool, right? Authenticity. I've talked about this for quite a while now on the podcast, but I mean it when it's the most important thing moving forward in this world is truth and authenticity. It is. And it's going to start to be shown in these ways, more obvious ways, which is why it's important for you to start to demonstrate it or embody it in your own life, because you don't want to be on the national stage and be shown as lying. You don't want that mask ripped off in front of everybody, right? Because it's a very, very traumatic experience, and it is one that will wake you up and keep you from doing that again, but not one that you should want or search for. There's easier ways to go about it, right? I truly mean this. I believe, Nikki, you are a beautiful person, quite obviously, a very attractive person, a very talented person, a very funny one. I'm sure you've wrote many of your jokes, right? And I'm sure many other comedians for those kind of purposes have other people write on roasts. I get it. But also, if that's the case, there needs to be a process through which the other people that are writing for you are represented on that stage. Otherwise, it's disingenuous. It's presented as if that is you roasting Tom Brady. And it wasn't. It was you plus however other many people that made the ideas. So why Kalilah is confused right there in that video is she can't figure out what she's been admiring. Was it actually you? Or was it these people that she's never gonna know and never gonna meet? Was I admiring a ghost, right? An idol. Don't be that. Be yourself. Be a real human being, like I've been saying. Show your flaws, and people will admire you for those flaws, for the bravery and courage it takes to show those flaws to the world. If you can do that, you'll find your storytelling ability. But the reason you can't tell a story right now, Nikki, is because you're too scared to say the truth. That's the truth. And I do believe it's time for people to start saying it. And if people in positions of power aren't going to start saying it, people out of it will, right? Somebody has to. And it's not going to be just me, I promise you that. As this continues on, anybody who is hiding and lying, this is what will happen to you, right? This is the separation happening in the world, and it's going to continue to happen, and it's going to continue to get more dramatic. and the consequences are going to be worse. Because I can promise you, people don't like to be tricked. They really don't like to be tricked. It's one of the quickest ways you can inspire that predator inside to attack. And I pray to God that that doesn't happen to anybody. But that being said, history tells us a different story. That predator tends to attack, right? So tell the truth first, so that the predator doesn't think you're an enemy, doesn't think you're a threat. Because the real truth is, if you're not telling the truth, you are a threat. You are the enemy to the human race. That's the truth. So as you can see, there's a lot of people in a lot of positions of power that are being judged right now, not by me, by the universe. And it's not very pleased, if you couldn't tell. The world's been backwards for a very long time, and people have been pretending as if they were gods themselves, acting as if they were gods, that they could decide what the truth is, say it, and then say it hard enough, and then make people believe it. If you get enough people behind you, then you're the truth, not... You can test it. The universe will let you try that idiotic path. You won't realize it's wrong until you're too far down it. That's the separation, right? That's how you know. That's how the universe decides. You choose. You have free will. So if you choose something other than human being, what you get is something other than human being. The next video I have is a JRE clip, a Joe Rogan clip from Gad Saad, which is he's a researcher, a scientist. I don't know exactly what type of scientist, but he's a professor, a very, very interesting individual, and somebody that apparently has been on Joe Rogan more than any other person, like 10 times. But every time he's on, I find the conversations fascinating. And the conversation he recently had on his most recent episode of Rogan was very, very enlightening, specifically on the topic of lying and dishonesty and honesty. So without further ado, I want to watch this because it's going to give us a little context in what we've been talking about.
50,000 students over the last 20 years. Hey, go, hey guys, remember that shit that I told you? Yeah.
It's bullshit.
Turns out, yeah. I thought it was true. What would you do? That's got to be horrible for them. When new information comes out that's irrefutable, some new scanning, new thing that shows that this thing that we had always held to be true, that you've taught in classes, that you've won awards for, is nonsense.
Yeah. So there's a great, so my favorite quote, and maybe Jamie could pull it out, by J.B.S. Haldane. J.B.S. Haldane was an evolutionary geneticist, but was also known for having these beautiful quotable quips. And so here the quote in question, I have it in the last chapter of The Consuming Instinct, 2011 book. He's talking about the four stages that academics go through before they accept a theory. So I'm paraphrasing now what his stages are. Stage one, oh, this is complete rubbish bullshit. Stage two, well, this may be true, but largely unimportant. Stage three, well, this is definitely true, but it's probably not actionable. Stage four, oh, I always said so, right? So what happens is you go through these phases, and if you're dogged enough, as I was, then the people who laughed at you in stage one, oh, there you go. This is worthless nonsense. This is worthless nonsense. This is an interesting but perverse point of view. This is true but quite unimportant. I always said so. And I've always said
that's the government's position on COVID vaccine.
Yes. That's exactly. Right. By the way, but here's the funny
part. Not just the government's.
I am a pathological email hoarder, meaning that I never get rid of emails because I always think, what if I ever need whatever's contained in that email?
Right.
So I have emails from people who, let's say, had taken a very negative position in stage one. Your evolutionary psychology stuff is bullshit. I have that email. It's 2001. And I have the email from 2019 when you say, dear God, we would be honored if you would be the plenary speaker. I'm like, oh, but what happened to I was a bullshitter in 2001?
Oh, wow.
So you just have to be dogged. You have to collect the evidence.
But here's my position.
So isn't that fascinating? I absolutely love that video. It made me laugh out loud when I heard that, that somebody had actually put that down into steps. My goodness, I'm sweating. put that down into steps. That we could learn about, right? But it's so true, and it goes into what I was talking about earlier, what I've been talking about, right? But very specifically, the last step. You see this progression, right? Of first this new idea, this new thing, whatever it is, hating it, calling it the worst idea ever. It doesn't have any sense. It doesn't make any sense. I can't even contemplate it. Then it's a crazy idea, but it could never work. And then This is something that I believe in, but I don't know how to apply it. And then finally, I always thought it was true, right? What we see people doing when they're caught in lies, unfortunately, what we think they'll do and what actually happens is two different things. What we think they'll do is admit that they were wrong. That's what we want to see, right? What actually happens in reality, more times than not, and I've experienced this myself, I'll tell you an anecdote in just a little bit. When somebody is lying and they get caught lying, very seldomly will they admit when they're caught. Because the act of being caught is something they're trying to avoid. So even if somebody has been lying, they want to tell the truth on their own accord. They want to decide when to do that. So when you confront somebody and you say, hey, you were lying, the fact that they were caught holding something like that, holding the truth, makes them defensive in a way where they want to defend themselves to begin with. And so what ends up happening is you'll never get them to admit the actual lie. Even if they were going to admit the lie to begin with, when you confront them, people start to defend themselves because they're being attacked as being a liar, right? And so it's this weird kind of process where we think we're, if we confront somebody, we're going to get the satisfaction of, oh, see, I was wrong, and yes, and now we can all be friends and stuff. But what we actually get is this slow progression where they slowly change over time. And then before you know it, they're acting as if they were your ally the entire time. Like they were always on that side. Like they always were the arbiters of truth, right? And they never acted against you. And this is a sad but true reality and almost kind of darkly comedic, right? And something that you can watch happen in both those videos we just watched. You can watch happen with Chris. You see the first video where he's completely arguing and berating somebody, shaming them, right, for not having the COVID vaccine. And then if you go back to those podcasts, I didn't show it in the clip here, but if you watch that podcast episode, Chris goes on for about 25 minutes uninterrupted, talking about how he didn't make a mistake in COVID. Right. And how it was all other people's fault, the government's fault, this person's fault, that person's fault, everybody except for him. He was given bad information, this kind of stuff. Right. That's what I mean. Even if it's obvious that they were lying, the person will avoid admitting that that lie was intentional to their death. So that satisfaction you're never going to get. What we need to look for instead is an identification of the truth. The reason I'm saying it is because people will do that naturally, we need to find a way to hold people's feet to the fire without making them feel existentially threatened, right? Which is what I'm trying to do right here by confronting both Nikki and Chris in a podcast episode, right? And by speaking to them directly, I don't believe you're bad people. And I believe this is why people habitually defend themselves, is because the accusation of being a liar or dishonest is so debasing that we defend our identity to begin with. But what we're trying to get to is the truth. We're not trying to identify good and bad guys. We're trying to find the truth. And I need you to say what you're actually seeing so that we can combine those perspectives and get to a better version of it. But if you continue this lie in order to defend yourself, I'll never be able to figure out what you actually believe, and we'll continue this chaotic soup, right? It'll continue to get worse. I'll never be able to figure out how we can be allies, right? I'll always think you're an enemy in some way because I can't trust you. And so this really is a plea to anybody that feels like they're trapped in this scenario where I've already been caught lying and I feel like I need to defend myself. Or maybe you haven't even recognized that, but you feel this need to defend yourself constantly. I'm here to tell you, if you feel that constantly, it's because there's something that you, a mistake you made that you're defending, right? You don't need to constantly defend yourself. If you feel that need, it's because there's something that you're insecure about, as you saw with Nikki. Right, the only reason she defended why she had ghostwriters and things like that is because she internally doesn't believe it's a good thing. Nobody asked her to defend that. Nobody even asked her to talk about that part. They were just complimenting her, right? So it's a weird thing to have somebody defend themselves when they're given a compliment that tells you everything you need to know, right? they're insecure about what they did. If you feel that, tell the truth in as much detail as you can. What you'll find as you go through that fear is that that weight, that hole, that pit that you've been feeling inside that's been keeping you from being you will start to release, will start to go away. But it only comes when you decide to face the dragon, to take out your sword and be a fucking warrior and say no more, right? That's what it is. This is very serious stuff. And lying is very serious stuff. We'll get into a little bit more deeper at the spiritual side of the podcast, why it's so serious. But it's existential. If you lie and you lie continuously, it's one of the quickest ways to lose who you are as a person. And I mean that in totality.
Lying is very powerful because you can manipulate the world with your language, and then you can get what you want lots of times or escape from things that you don't want. So why not lie all the time? Well, I think the reason is there's a bunch of reasons, but one of them is that you can't trust yourself if you lie. And there's going to be times in your life where you have no one to turn to except you. And so if you've stuffed yourself full of lies, then you're going to be in a crisis one day, and you're going to have to make a decision, and you're going to decide wrong, and you're going to be in real trouble. Because you won't have the clarity of mind necessary to make the proper judgment. Because you've filled your imagination and your perception with rubbish.
Powerful, right? But extremely well said. And that's what I'm getting to as we move into the more spiritual side of the podcast. That lying is a very serious sin against yourself. And sinning, Jordan Peterson defines, you know, traditionally the word actually means to miss the mark. It's an archery term, right? So it's not like doing something bad. It's not capitalizing on the opportunity you have, right? And when you think about sinning in that way and you apply it to lying, then you start to understand why lying is a sin. Because what it does is it convinces you that you're aiming at the right point, when in reality, you're gonna miss the mark. And if you continue to tell yourself you're aiming at the right point while you're missing the mark, you will never hit that thing. You'll get further and further away from it as you do. And then before you know it, you might shoot or kill something you didn't intend, right? This is the process at play. And then that's how bad things happen. That's how evil people become evil. We like to think that they slowly fester and stew into this nasty thing that wants to destroy the world. And while I do believe that can exist, those jokers are created in the world. More commonly, what happens is people trick themselves into being that nasty thing by trying to defend something that shouldn't be defended, by trying to hold on to lies. And we all know this, that as you tell one lie, it enables another one and it demands another one, as a matter of fact, so that as you tell that one lie, you tell another one, and it balloons until you get to a point where you can no longer figure out what the truth is. And this is what Jordan Peterson is speaking of. If you do that long enough, you'll never be able to see what you actually are. Something as trivial as even what you like to eat, what you like to listen to, how you like to dress, you know, things are purely your opinion, you'll start to confuse because you don't know how to say the truth anymore. The more you do that, the more you get disconnected from who you truly are at a spiritual level. Your soul identity. Whether you believe it or not watching this podcast right now, I am here to tell you that you are a divine, eternal thing deep down. This thing you're watching me move around is an avatar, right? It's the same thing as a car, if you think about it that way. It's something I can move around. It's a visual indicator of the spirit that I am, but it's not the spirit, right? This is a vessel for that spirit. The spirit is eternal, and there's qualities to that spirit. There's an identity to that is undeniable. And when you try to deny it, what it does is separate that thing that's lying from that truth, right? So as I start to say that I'm a talented musician or something like that, right? Or a talented artist. But somebody criticizes my artwork or my music, and I take that on internally and say, yeah, that was a bad song. What I'm doing is accepting something that isn't true based on somebody else's perception and taking that manipulation in, but I'm accepting that lie, and then I'm repeating that lie internally. That song was bad, even though it wasn't. So then I stop I start to identify things that were good indicators as bad indicators, right? The more you do that, the more your ability to see what's good and what's bad flops. And before you know it, you are in hell, literally. Everything is backwards, literally, right? And the only way out of it is to disentangle that huge knot of lies that you've created. This is partially why in the 12-step program, one of the steps is to apologize to the people that you've hurt, to think about those people and to go apologize, to try to make amends, right? It's because there's a whole series of things that you did in that. It's not about the other person, it's about you disentangling what the truth was, right? What actually happened? Who was the bad guy? Why was I acting the way I was acting? And the only way you get to that is by you being honest about why you did what you did, why you said what you said, you know, who you were at the time, not the thing you were trying to present yourself as. Spiritually, that separation is dangerous because this vessel is yours. Like I said, it's your car. It's designed for you. It's not meant to have anything else in it. There's no back seat. It's just you, right? But as you start to lie and you start to separate and you start to get backwards, that separation happens. There's a void created in the vessel because you can't embody it fully anymore. You're confusing yourself with something else. You're saying, I want to be something else. And that vessel isn't here. So you're looking out in the world for it. You're trying to find other idols that you can look at that would be better versions of it, right? And so you're saying, I want that, not this. I want that, not this. Very subtly, maybe not intentionally, but that's what you're telling yourself every time you idolize something outside of yourself or you identify something that is a good thing about you as a bad thing about you. And then that tells everything else in the universe, all the other energies, that this thing doesn't appreciate what it has. It doesn't like its home. Matter of fact, there's a vacancy there now. They're not staying at their home. They're trying to go outside of their home. They're trying to be in everybody else's home. So how about we take their home? Because another secret is those universal energies, you know, those spirits, those souls, they don't end, right? They're eternal. And just because they're not embodied doesn't mean they don't exist. And a lot of those want to be embodied. A lot of these souls and spirits have experienced things that confuse them and stick them to this plane. And so we, as you see with ghosts and spirits and all of these things that you experience throughout your life, if you have experienced the paranormal, those are energies that are looking for homes. Right? And when you lie, you give them a place to call home. They're squatters. This, what I'm trying to get to is the concept of what we think about as possession, right? It's not just the, you know, most extreme version of it. It's not just you fully embodied by a demon. It's you embodied by anything but what you are. So any other spirit calling your vessel home, that's a possession. And you'll start to experience a certain type of thirst when those energies embody your vessel. You may start experiencing addictions that are foreign to you. You may start acting in weird ways or lashing out in weird ways. These are all very specific downloads for somebody that's watching right now, right? Recognize that's not you. When you recognize that's not you, you identify the thing that's hiding and you say, no. I forgot this was my home. I want this as my home. You get the fuck out, right? Tell the truth. Clean out your home. Because the real truth is there's no judgment waiting for you. The judgment is what's happening right now. It's immediate. Karma acts immediately. We don't think it does because we have our own versions or ideas of what justice is proper for a certain action. But it's we're such small things that we don't do a very good job of identifying what would be a just punishment for something. Oftentimes, a just punishment for a certain action is the exact thing the action was done for, right? So oftentimes we're so misled by what we want that the punishment for the action that we took to get what we want is what we want because we're that confused. And man, oh man, look at the world of celebrity. You know, if you ever asked yourself why there's so many celebrities that end up killing themselves or dying at young ages or drug addicts, this is why, right? You tell yourself you want something you don't want, you get it, right? You trick yourself into thinking that void inside will be healed by something external. Karma gives it to you. And that is the most brutal punishment you could ever imagine. Just wait. Right. But if you're sitting on the sidelines and you're projecting externally what you don't have on those people, God, I'm so broke. It'd be so nice if I was a millionaire, you know, that would solve all my problems. You fail to recognize the ways, the very specific ways in which that person that is already a millionaire is suffering. Why? Because you assume that the hole went away because of the money. But it didn't. Did it? Don't believe me, ask a millionaire, right? It goes away by you being honest and a real human being and acting on what you actually want to do. And the only person that can tell you what that is you through being honest. So that's what we've come to at the end of this podcast. And I hope it's been refreshing for you. It's a little shorter than the last couple, but a little more pointed and a little more energetically taxing for me. As you can see, I'm sweating like crazy and trying to keep my arms down so everybody's not staring at my sweaty armpits. But these are important things. Armpits, I'm sweaty, right? These are human aspects, right? That's a very good example, and I love it just came through. Like, don't hide what you are. I'm a human being. I sweat. I smell. I have outbursts. I get angry. I have sexual needs. I have all of these other things, right? All of the things that human beings have tried to hide and iron out of themselves throughout history. No. That's what I am. That's what you are. Don't pretend anymore. And anybody else that presents themselves as a perfect thing out there, I promise you this is what's coming for you. Just tell the truth now. It'd be a lot easier. I'm going to end this episode by telling you an anecdote, a story from my life that actually is something that I found out fairly recently. And actually, unfortunately, is not something I ever found out. It's something that I had to intuit, understand myself. But as many of you may have known from previous podcasts and my history of what I've gone through, I was in the military, in the Air Force, and I went through I was in there for about 3.5 years, about 2 years into my, 2.5 years into my enlistment, I got in trouble for spice, which spice was like a synthetic marijuana version that was very popular in that period of time. But it was kind of a gray area in the military. It was frowned upon and you weren't supposed to do it, but you could still get it, kind of a thing. So I was one of the very young, impressionable people that were still getting it and pushing the boundary, which is very typical of me. I don't like to just take somebody's word for don't do something. I like to test it. And when I was more naive and young, I did this to my detriment. And this is what I did in the military. I made some very bad decisions and got surrounded by a group of people that influenced those decisions and encouraged them as well. And so it got me into a scenario where I got in trouble and I ended up getting kicked out of the military. And for a long time, long period of time, I believed that I was a fuck up, that the reason that that happened was only because of the mistakes I made. And I punished myself. I brutalized myself for a decade over that. Hated myself and what I was for that. But about 6 months ago, I had a realization and it was really profound and it released a lot for me, which is what told me and showed me that what I had just realized was true. It was because there was a release. I felt better physically. You know, I noticed it. Essentially what had happened is I was a cop. I was military police, security forces in the Air Force. And the group of people, my platoon was called a flight for the Air Force. It was a group of about 30 or 40 people. And you become very close with these people because you work with them. You do everything with them. I was in Guam, right? So I was literally on the other side of the world on an island about 9 miles wide and 40 miles long at its longest, right? So I was isolated at the utmost. And this environment, the island environment, was a very kind of work hard, play hard environment. So when I got there, I got caught in this kind of let's have fun as an 18-year-old would idea. And so we started to party in many different ways, not only spice, but drinking and going, doing all the typical things that you do in the military. But this very quickly, especially because we were cops, got out of control, because especially the gray areas, the spice, me doing that, the other cops that I was with all doing that, was not a very good example for the rest of the base, right? And it was something that's fairly known about on the base. Anyway, you get the point. As this went on, people started to notice, and eventually we got in trouble. The reason we got in trouble was there was this whole scenario at a party where somebody ended up smoking a hookah that I had put spice in, that didn't know there was spice in. And so they realized that they had gotten high, and then they got mad at me, and I told them that that's what had happened. And then, but anyway, an investigation got launched. I basically got investigated for drugging somebody. That was never my intention, and that was not what I was trying to do by any means. I was at a party just trying to have fun myself. But when you're at a party, you can't really control what happens and what other people do, right? And so got in trouble, this investigation got launched. The problem was the party environment I described was, this was not driven by me, right? And this was something I had to come to understand. I was not creating this party environment. It was actually there when I got there. And I remember that very specifically because it was not my intention to join the military to party. It was actually the exact opposite. I was joining the military to avoid the partying that I would obviously do if I went to the university. So it was very confounding to get there and find the same thing. But everybody, and I remember getting caught in this, everybody on my flight, everybody that I worked with, we all got caught in this. I mean, 30, 40 cops all using this substance at the same time, a lot and continuously. So much so that after it started to draw attention, I started to realize this. This is a problem. And a matter of fact, we had gotten in trouble and kind of had our asses saved one time before, which kind of cued me in, hey, we should probably get this under control, stop, and get our shit cleaned up. So much so that I had, at one point, about 2 weeks before we got in trouble, I had gathered all of our friends up, right? And I remember this very specifically because I was so scared. I could see what was coming. I could see that those storm clouds are about to fucking hit me, right? And I wanted to make sure that we could salvage this thing, that I wasn't gonna destroy my life. You know, it's like I saw the earthquake coming and I wanted to avoid it. So I called everybody together and we had this conversation. It was a very specific conversation because I was asking everybody and saying like, hey, this needs to stop so that we all don't get in trouble, right? Well, fast forward through the whole thing, obviously we ended up getting caught anyway about 2 weeks later. And one of the reasons that I got caught was because there was a pipe, right? A homemade pipe. It was made out of a 2-liter bottle that was found in my ceiling. It was like a ceiling tiles you could push up. And it was confusing for me because when we had that meeting that I just told you about stopping, I had done that. I had stopped. And when I had done that, I had gone and cleaned my room out, including all of the places that I would hide stuff, right? Why would I not take that stuff and get rid of it, which I had done. Fast forward to this day when the investigation gets launched, I'm sitting in handcuffs in front of my dorm room as OSI is searching my room, and out walks one of these OSI agents with a 2-liter bottle of pipe. And he literally looks at me and says, "What the fuck is this?" And I, genuinely not knowing what the fuck that was because it wasn't mine, said that, "I don't know what the fuck that is." And then he looks at me like, "Yeah, you don't know what the fuck it is. It's in your ceiling tiles, you know?" And he asked me where it was and stuff. And I was like, "I don't know. I don't know where that came from." So confused, trying to figure out what the fuck happened. Initially, I think that it's one of my other friends because unfortunately my room was used as a party spot quite often, even when I wasn't there. So my friends would break into my room, steal all my food, smoke spice in my room so they didn't get it in their room, that kind of shit. Me wanting to have friends allowed that to happen very dumbly while I was there so that when I wasn't there, they would do it anyway. At some point in this process, a bottle had been hidden in my ceiling. And because of this, I was identified not only because of that evidence, it was one of the only evidence that was really found, but also because the statements that all of my friends made to OSI as they were investigating what happened. What I learned after the fact, after I read all of the discovery from the investigation, and I got to read everybody's statements, is that most of them, not all, but most of those people had made me look like the ringleader. Like I was the one that was driving it. Like I was the one that was like I was forcing people to use this drug. Now, taking into account the story I just told you, how would you react if you had specifically called a meeting to stop what was happening so this didn't happen? And then in the end, most of those people who were a part of that meeting finger you as the person that did it, that drove it, that caused it. Fast forwarding, we were ROD'd for 9 months. I had my gun taken away, my badge taken away. I put on shit duty for about 9 months and I was under investigation by OSI. I got charged with 3 different counts, different criminal counts with a sentence up to 10 years, right? I was 21 years old. And standing in front of my commander and her telling me that you could face a maximum penalty of 10 years in federal prison for, in my mind, smoking spice. I hope what it does, at least for you listening, is demonstrate to you exactly how jarring that experience was for me and how much of a betrayal it was. Those people I had called brothers and friends, that they, not only did they kind of not listen when I was trying to tell them something bad is going to happen, they blamed me for it. And most of those guys slowly left, getting a slap on the wrist, this or that, or most of them retaining their positions, some of them going on and getting in trouble and getting kicked out at other bases, right? Getting second chances. I had to watch this happen. I had to watch my career be stolen from me, right? But again, at this time, I was telling myself that I was the only thing to blame. The reason I'm telling this story is about 6 months ago, I came into contact with my old roommate, who was my best friend at the time, and was one of the people that had been ROD'd or under investigation for the longest time. He was basically, it was just me and him for all of those 9 months. Everybody else got released. So we both thought that we were the ones that were gonna get in trouble for it. All the way up until this one day, when he gets called into the commander's office and I'm sitting there by myself in my apartment thinking, well, here we go. I guess it's just me now. And he comes back a couple hours later and says, it's all done, man. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I told him the truth. I was like, oh, what do you mean? And he's like, I told him it wasn't you. I told him that it was kind of a thing that we, you know, I sometimes was a part of it and it was a thing that everybody kind of did. And like, oh, okay, cool, hell yeah. And so like it basically ended this investigation because he had made this statement, which basically he did tell the truth. He told the truth that I wasn't this ringleader. They had been led to believe through the other statements that I was some drug kingpin funneling drugs onto a military installation. And that was in no way true. It was just a young kid partying, right, with his friends. And so he basically told him that. And so I'm like, thank you. Oh my God, thank you. I feel like in debt to this person for the next 10 years of my life because he saved a decade of me being in prison. And so 6 months ago, I'm like, I want to come into contact with him. I want to talk to him, hang out with him again, see what's going on, see how he's doing, check in. And so we jump on a game. We're playing Fortnite and just shooting the shit, catching up. And pretty soon I'm like talking and I'm like, hey, do you remember like when we were in trouble? Like that was fucking crazy, wasn't it? And he's like, yeah. And especially since he was the only person that was there basically the whole 9 months with me, he was the one person I really wanted to talk about the experience of being investigated like that with, because everybody else had gotten off. They didn't really experience the same thing. He was the only one that had been there. And so I'm talking and I'm like, man, do you remember when we had that meeting, man? Like how we could have avoided all of this? You remember when we went up to whoever's room it was, Jake's room or whoever it was, we all sat down and like, we got to stop this. Don't you remember that? And the way he reacted to me asking him that question shocked me. Like it really set me back. It was a subtle thing, but it really hit me because he did this like very weird, like at first he was like, I don't remember that. And then I was like, you don't remember that? Because I very, very specifically remembered that because it was so critical to the story. And he's like, no, yeah, I don't really remember that happening. And I don't think and as he kept on saying it, I realized, and you can feel this, it's, you know, you're gonna have to go on, you're gonna have to just trust me on this, but you can feel it in the moment when somebody's trying to avoid something. And it was something that's usually very subtle, but in that moment was so blatantly obvious that he did not want me to talk about that. Not only that, but the whole kind of what happened around there, he would breeze by it very quickly. And so like I was left after we stopped playing that night with kind of a little bit of confusion. I was like, why? I was expecting to kind of reminisce over this experience. It wasn't like I was trying to figure out what happened. I was trying to reminisce about what happened. And he was trying to, and he avoided that. And so that cued me in, like, why would you avoid that? You know, if you had gone, if you're at the same point I'm at, you know, where you're kind of over it, you got through it, you know, shit happened, but we let go. Why wouldn't you just be? And as I asked that, I started to realize what had happened. Because when I thought back on it, I recognized that the story I had told myself about how that bottle got in my ceiling didn't make any sense. Because what I had told myself was my friend Eddie, who lived above me about halfway down the building, had at some point snuck into my room, smoked spice, and hidden the bottle in my ceiling tiles. That's what I thought. And I don't know if it was Jake that told me that actually now, because I can't remember, but I do feel like that was actually something that Jake hinted to me. And Eddie probably did that or something like that. But what I realized after the fact was that's not what happened. That actually, if I had to explain how a bottle that I didn't know, how a pipe got in my ceiling, a much more reasonable explanation was my suite mate, the room that was directly next to mine and shared a ceiling and ceiling tiles, put it there. That maybe when we found out that everybody was getting investigated and the investigation was launching off before going in to be handcuffed, somebody threw that bottle over the ceiling. And when I had that idea, I was given the truth. You just recognize it, right? Why? Because I had tried to figure out for so long what had happened. And what I finally realized is the story I told myself made zero sense. What actually makes sense is that the person that tried to be the hero, as a matter of fact, was the villain, right? And the reason he felt compelled to save me at the end, because he knew that he was the cause of it. He was the reason that I was being fingered as the bad guy. Now, the reason I tell you that story and why it's so long and drawn out is because I'm trying to demonstrate to you the fact that you are never going to get the satisfaction you think you're going to get from someone when you confront them with a lie or the truth. As much as you want it, it's a very rare experience to have somebody admit that in front of you and to have that release happen right there, because it's a very personal thing. And even if they do have that admittance, it usually isn't going to happen right in that moment right in front of you. What you have to do is be confident in enough in what you've seen and what you feel to say that out loud and to let it sit there. To not let their defense of themselves deconvince you of the truth, gaslight you out of seeing what actually happened, what makes sense. Right? And I realized that that's what happened to me. And as I've said before, that by no means takes away the mistakes or the decisions I made, you know, putting myself in those positions by choosing to smoke spice over and over again, all the way up until that point. But I also had to consider that I had done something different than everybody else. I had tried to stop that too. Yes, I was a party of it, but I tried to stop it, and that's not something that I saw other people do. And those other people didn't receive the same punishment. So that incongruency demanded that I look deeper. And I'm getting that if you're listening to this, there's a reason you're listening to this, that you've experienced some kind of situation in your life like this. It's much more common than people like to admit. People lie all the time. All the time. All the fucking time. Right, just as much as it hurts, recognize that the people that you're closest to lie to you all the fucking time, right? They do it constantly. And if you want a little bit of grace in that, just recognize that they've done it so long that they don't recognize it anymore most of the time. And they convince themselves that they're not doing a bad thing, right? So you don't have to villainize the person to recognize that they're not being a true human being, right? But you also have to recognize they're not being a true human being. And the only way you do that is by saying your truth. Scream that shit out loud. I never got validation from Jake on this, and I don't know if I ever will. And as a matter of fact, I don't expect it, right? I'm not looking for it. I'm just looking to tell my story and to say what happened. And I know that bottle wasn't mine. I know that, right? So, as you can see, lying's a difficult subject to talk about. It's chaotic by nature. This episode's been a little more chaotic than the last couple because of that, because I'm trying to sort out some of these things in my head as I talk about them, as I hope you are. That's what this podcast is about. If it's confusing for anybody that listens to it, as you start to engage with it, know that it's designed very intentionally to align with where you are at when you're listening to it, right? So episodes from 4 years ago that maybe don't resonate with you, it's because you're not in that energy, right? And it makes sense. If there's episodes today that do, I mean, it's because you are in this energy right now. It doesn't mean that 2 weeks from now, you're not gonna be in the energy of an episode from 3 years ago. This is an intuitive series, right? This is a show in which you have to allow your feeling to guide you, right? So listen to it in that way, because you can go back and hear me contemplating many of the things I'm talking about now as completed stories, as understandings, when I'm in the midst of the confusion, right? And I hope that that lends you a little bit of comfort in the chaos, because while the chaos by nature is uncomfortable, it doesn't have to be torturous, right? You don't have to do it alone. You can know that that process is similar for most people so that you're not abnormal in that soup, right? And that's what I'm trying so desperately to tell people, is that don't be ashamed for being a human being. The reason that everything horrible is happening around the world right now is because we are ashamed of what we are as a species. We have shamed and whipped ourselves into believing that we are an evil thing, a nasty thing, simply for traits that we have as a being of this world. We don't torture a bear because it eats things, right? Yet we find our predatory nature something torturous, something that should be beat out of ourselves, right? That is so cruel. That itself is demonic. We create that. We are the devil to ourselves, right? This is so deeply true. And if you recognize this, you can release a lot of the pain from your life and recognize that heaven has always been right here, just like hell has, right? And it's not going anywhere unless you choose something different. So choose something different. Chris Cuomo, Nikki Glaser, choose something different. You're not gonna lose what you have. You don't have to hold on to it. The only way you lose on to what you have is by trying to hold on to it. If you don't believe me, look at all of the examples throughout history of people who were in positions like yours. That's how you lose it, is doing what you're doing right now. Stop. I don't wanna see that happen. And I send you guys lots of love. Lots of love. Because we are struggling with God, right? That's a beautiful thing. Be proud of yourself. And don't ever stop. Never. With that, that is the unpounded... I cannot end the podcast correctly. The unpounded podcast, apparently. The unfounded podcast. For today, this week at least, I really hope you enjoyed this episode. It was one that I was really excited to get on and do and very anxious to do because of all of the energy. So I really hope that you enjoyed it. And I hope that it's something that you contemplate at a deep level and try to apply in your own life, because that's what I'm doing. I am by no means perfect. And please know this. By speaking on the topic and trying to hold certain people's feet to the fire, I am by no means trying to present myself as something better than you. I am not. I am very, very intentionally telling you I am the same thing. I have the same feelings. I have the same proclivities. I want to defend myself in the same way and have, right? And still would and do. I'm not better than that. I try to be, right? Just like everybody else should be. The only thing that I'm doing different is saying that out loud. Do that. Say the truth, right? That is the only difference. Because as I started to do that, I started to realize that the human being is such a beautiful fucking thing, and we don't realize it. The human being is perfect, exactly as it is, imperfectly. The only thing we have to recognize is that. We have to stop hating ourselves. God damn it, the human race hates itself, and we need to stop that. Because I love it, at the very least. Anyway, I'm gonna get off of here. I'm getting goofy now, so I will see you guys all very soon. And lots of love, and hang in there. It's gonna get better, I promise.